Podcast. In conversation with musicians from the UK jazz scene. And now your hosts, Rob Cope and Dan Farrant.
Hello and welcome to the Jazz Podcast. Today is a momentous day because it's episode 30. I am your host, Rob Cope, and I'm sitting here with Dan Farrant. How's it going, Dan?
I'm all right. How are you, Rob?
I'm very good. I'm thinking if we numbered all of the shows we'd ever done, we'd probably be up around 50. But
including the album stuff. And
yeah, I've kind of styled it like Star Wars, where we only number the ones that are like stories.
Yeah.
So such is the situation. This is the 30th episode that is a life story of somebody's life.
Mm.
So we're having a big push for reviews. So if you're listening to this and you're feeling like you want to help the Jazz Podcast to grow and to spread, you can review us on the however you're listening to us, find a way to review it. And then if you could leave a review, that would be really cool.
Have you had any good reviews? Should we have a look?
It's currency to Apple getting a review. That's what they understand when they want to either promote us or give us more of a attention or less. Here we go. Still says I can write a review, which is great. They're obviously not.
Oh, we've had 40 episodes, including the albums.
How do you know?
Previews. Actually, it says on iTunes.
That's awesome. I did not know that. Okay, so essentially, to give you an overview, we've got... oh my God, someone's given us a one-star review.
Oh, yeah, great. What did it say?
I can't see that they've written a review. They've just one-starred us and moved on.
Oh, at least leave a review, like a reason.
Yeah, I know. That's very shocking.
Oh, shame.
So we've got 24 ratings, 22 five-star reviews, 1 4-star, and 1 1-star review. I don't mind having 1 star, but I would love to know why. The 4-star review doesn't say. They're untraceable. They're gone. Great podcast. Nice to hear some ramblings. Well, that's what this is, that's for sure.
Definitely is a ramblings.
Yeah. So I played at the Barbican last week with Matthew Herbert, Brexit big band. Spectacular.
Great. How did that go?
It was fun. Matthew had people throw paper airplanes onto the stage.
Because?
Messages to Europe. And then we all wave farewell at the end. It's kind of funny and tragic all at once.
Oh.
Yeah.
Why did he decide to do that theme?
He's doing a gig in every European nation between the vote to leave the European Union and the... and the, like, activation or whatever, you know, the day when we leave.
Right.
A monstrous collaborative effort. Yeah.
Cool.
Time.
Are you doing all of them or just this one?
They get booked one at a time. So so that was the first one I'd done, and hopefully there will be more. But the week after that one, they went to Japan, which is a bit annoying. I know.
Shame. Next time. Next Brexit.
Yeah, exactly. If we could just do it all again, then I might get that Japan gig.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, Christian Pryor won the last competition. So
what was the last competition?
It was to guess which is our top rated show of all time.
Oh, great. And he got it right.
He got it right.
Oh, very good.
No messing about.
So great. What does he win?
He is the proud owner of the Brass Funkies' brand new album, Rabble Rouser.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. I just hope he likes it.
Great. Did anyone else enter, or was it just him?
Just him.
Oh, yeah. I love these. Oh, yes.
Two competitions, and both times we've only had one entrant, and they've got the question correct, which is incredible, really.
Oh, dear.
I know.
I wonder what we'd have to offer to get people to enter. Do you think if we offered like a tenner, people would suddenly enter?
Oh, I see, the chance to win cash.
Well, what is it that people want? They obviously don't want the Brass Funkies or Leo's album.
No.
No offense to either, but
but the people have spoken, so let's try something else. Let's try giving away a Jazz Podcast T-shirt.
Great. I think that would not get any entrance either. What do you think, Rob?
Well, let's try it. I've created a question off the top of my head.
Let's hear it.
Okay. Which conservatoire hosts an annual saxophone day?
Oh, dear.
Yep. It's out there. It's happened now. No taking back. TheJazzPodcastUK@gmail.com if you want a Jazz Podcast T-shirt.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think you're going to be holding on to that T-shirt, Rob.
Good. Good. I want it. I like it. Let's listen to Ruth. Ruth Goller, welcome to the Jazz Podcast.
Hiya.
So, Ruth, first of all, let's talk straight away about the chocolate that you just told me that you're making.
Do you want a recipe?
I want to know roughly what's going on right now.
It's the simplest thing in the world. Like, I would have never thought it was that simple to make, but you just need three things, which is one is coconut. Is it coconut oil? Or hold on, let me just check the thingy. No, coconut butter. You can buy it in any like health food shop. Yeah, super simple coconut butter. Then you need cocoa powder, and then either honey or agave syrup or whatever, any kind of sweet kind of thing. And you just heat it up, put it all together, and then you put it in whatever kind of form you want it. You can make like little sort of things with, you know, the paper, sort of little paper cups, or that's it, in the fridge, and that's that.
That's great. That sounds amazing. So tell us about your life. Where were you born?
I was born in the Dolomites, which is it's part of the Alps in northern Italy. So I was kind of between Austria, Switzerland, but actually on the Italian side. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah, but it's a bit of a mixture. Like, we speak German there, and, well, half, you know, it's kind of bilingual, really, that region. So I speak German at home, although I'm Italian on the passport, but, you know.
Ah, right. Wait a minute. You were born in Italy, but your family speak German?
Yeah, that's right. Because the region used to belong to Austria before the First World War, so it's kind of a border region like that, where people, it's just everything's bilingual. Wow. Everyone has to speak both languages. But it depends, you know, like families are mixed up. Let's say lots of people have one parent that is like Italian speaking and the other parent that is German speaking. But then both my parents were German speaking, so I mainly, you know, I learned Italian at school, basically.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So how much has that helped you in life, being able to speak three languages?
Well, I don't really know, because I don't really know any different, but I think probably just knowing languages helps, you know.
Yeah.
I think generally it just helps understand people and cultures, and just certain words that people use, you can sort of relate to them a bit better if you understand what they're saying, or like even like certain, sorry, it doesn't really make sense, but I was just thinking about, like, you know, you have certain words that exist only in a few languages.
Yes.
And you can't really translate it in another language.
Yeah.
And often those words say a lot about a culture, you know.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Oh, that's nice.
I can't actually think of any examples now, but...
I know what you mean.
Many times I've been thinking about, I really want to say this, but I couldn't, because I didn't know the equivalent, you know, I don't know the equivalent in English. Or,
yeah. Well, we're not renowned for having a beautiful language, are we?
No, I mean, also vice versa. You know, often, like, when I go home now, I want to say something and I can't quite express myself because, oh, dear, is that your cat?
Oh, my God, he's going to ruin this podcast, yeah. Just ignore him. He's just angry because we've been away for a few days. So he's shouting as loud as he can.
Bless him.
There's quite a few shows where he's like made a cameo appearance.
That's great.
I
just had a similar scenario here as well, because we have a new cat, and because she hates my old cat. They can't be in the same room.
Oh no!
So while I was on the phone, I had to maneuver getting my old cat in without her attacking him and then bringing her out.
When did you get your new cat?
A couple of months ago, but yeah, she still absolutely despises him.
Are they ever going to get along?
Who knows? I mean, I don't really know. It's kind of early days for them, I think. Yeah. But I can only hope, you know.
Of course.
Otherwise, we're going to have to split the house. At the moment, we have to split the house in like two parts.
Do you have a cat each?
No. You're only allowed to touch him.
Yeah, exactly.
No, there's no favourites.
Okay, that's very good of you. So what made you, when did you move to England?
I moved here just after I finished school, so in like 99, 2000.
Right.
And I just came here to study, basically. I didn't really play bass until I came here. I sort of wanted to learn.
Wait, so what did you move here to play bass, but you just didn't play that much before?
Yeah, well, I was in a band. It was like a punk band I was in when I was growing up, and I was kind of playing guitar. And at the end of that, I was a little bit of bass, but I just didn't really know anything about music. You know, I sort of knew power chords, but I didn't know anything about reading or writing or harmony or like any sort of theory.
Right.
So I just wanted to learn about that. And where I'm from, it's really, you know, it's a very small town, so there's no kind of music school. There wasn't really anything I could go to.
Was there anywhere else in Italy you attempted to study?
No, not really. I never really wanted to go to further south in Italy. I never really fancied that.
Yeah.
I think I just wanted to also go away, you know, live somewhere else for a little bit
and
have a bit of an adventure. So it was real coincidence that I came to London, because it was kind of a friend of a friend knew that there was lots of schools, and I literally googled like music schools, found one, applied, got in, and that was it. But it could have been any, you know, it could have been any other city. Someone would have just suggested to me, and I probably would have ended up there.
Yeah.
So it was real. I'd never been in London before, so I didn't have any connections or, you know, it was just like that, yeah.
Which school did you study at?
Well, when I first came here, I went to the London Music School, which is like a sort of one-year diploma course.
Right.
It's kind of an introduction, really, to loads of things. You know, you sort of learn to write a little bit. You learn about, so you do some theory and learn about lots of different styles of music and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So it was really good for me, because it was, you know, very from scratch, like everything. So I played a lot in that year, because it was every day we had lessons from like 9 in the morning to like 6 or 7 in the evening.
Yeah.
So, I literally just played the bass for a year every day.
That sounds great.
I probably haven't done since then, to that extent, you know.
Yeah.
So I did that for a year. And then I kind of ran out of money and didn't really know what to do. I went back home for a year after that and just did some, just worked, earned some money, because I wanted to study after that. And then after that, after that year, I came back and studied at Middlesex University. I went there for three years.
How did it feel to go home after having been in London for a year and played your bass every day?
Yeah, it was. I felt kind of like I lost, you know.
Yeah.
Like I lost a battle.
Yeah.
But I think because I was, this school I went to was very close in the sense that you've been there, I've been there like every day and I only knew the people from there. I hardly knew anybody outside that circle, you right. know.
Yeah.
So I found it very hard to just start playing outside of that. I didn't really know where to start. And I also didn't really have the money at the time to stay and just take it easy for a bit and go to jam set. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wasn't really in that position. So, but then when I came back for Middlesex, it was completely different. I don't know why. Maybe it was myself or just my mindset about meeting people or, you know.
Yeah.
But as soon as I got there, I was playing straight. I almost had a gig like instantly, you know. It was people just from so many different places. It was a bit more broad somehow, and I just started getting into lots of bands, and from there on it was very easy.
Wow. Yeah. Did you learn English at school?
Yeah, we did have English lessons. Okay. But when I came here I didn't understand anything. I had a bar job when I got here. I was working in a bar in Shoreditch somewhere. I actually remember the first day, people coming in as a waitress, so behind the counter, people talking to me. I had no idea what they were saying.
Oh, it must have been horrible.
It was terrible. I learned very quickly, though.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Oh, excuse. It was a good experience, yeah.
Your English is perfect. It's just sounds like English.
I know so many people that are going to laugh at this because everyone takes the piss out of my accent.
Oh, why? Well, I don't know what accent it is. It's hard to describe.
Yeah, I don't know either. I think it changes quite a lot, like how tired.
Yeah,
depends how tired I am, or you know who I'm with. Or
we did an episode with John Escreet a few months ago.
Oh yeah.
Now after John's accent, everyone's off the hook. Because that thing, that needs an expert big time to...
Does he sound American now?
Yeah.
Really?
Wow. Most of the time, American. And then, it kind of like you say, it like changes and there's a bit of like fluctuation. Certain words come out differently.
Yeah,
But yeah, it doesn't sound like he's from Doncaster. I'm hoping he doesn't listen to this. I think he'll appreciate my analysing his accent.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, this is really weird because he sounds American for a while, and then you're like, "Whoa, is that an English word in there?" And then we'll go back again. But yeah,
that's fascinating. Because I think it's different if you speak a different language, you know, and then learn another language and then you sort of you get an accent, and I think that accent probably moves quite a lot. But if you already speak English and move to another English speaking country with another accent, I can't really imagine how that or why that would change, because you're just speaking your own language.
Exactly, that's where the expert comes in, because I can't explain it, I can't rationalize what's happened. So you enjoyed your time at Middlesex?
Yeah, it was great. I had a great time. It was brilliant.
Where did you move then? Well, were you just living in London when you finished?
Yeah, I was living in London. I moved together. We rented a house with some friends from there, from the course after that. So we all lived in Brixton, like in a house, like a 6-bedroom house.
Yeah.
And I lived there for like, I think, 5 years after that.
Oh, wow.
Just doing gigs. It's a long
time in one place.
Yeah. Actually, since then, it's always been like a 5-year patch.
Right. Brixton's a cool place to live.
It was at the time, yeah. I'm not sure if I'd enjoy it now. I'm kind of enjoy living somewhere a bit quieter now.
Yeah.
But at the time, it was great, you know. There was loads of gigs around there, and we had a great group of friends that She lived there. It was very easy.
Yeah.
Brockwell Park was like next door.
Yeah.
Spend most of the time in Brockwell Park.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I know what you mean. I'm too old to live in Brixton now.
Where do you live?
In Sunbury on Thames.
I don't even know where that is. No. It's on the Thames somewhere.
It's southwest London. Okay. Yeah. But it's far. It's far out, you know.
Oh, okay. Are you still on a line somewhere, on a tube or something?
We're on a Southwest Trains on the stopping service from Waterloo to Shepperton. So not really a very accessible place. No. Which is good for me, because if John Askreet comes after me, it'll take him ages to get here. You guys have a lovely house. I've been over once.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, you were laughing a lot.
Well, yeah, that sounds about right.
And not I can't remember what I was doing that day, but
you
remember
you were downstairs. You're on that podcast of
kids. I was rehearsing, wasn't I?
Yeah,
I remember. Yeah, that's right. And we were like saying, oh, that sounds like they're having a lot of fun up there.
Yeah, because we talked about Star Trek for the whole show.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course.
Of course we did. Why wouldn't you talk about Star Trek? Perfect. So, yeah, you are tenuously, this is your second appearance.
Yeah.
Which is great, because there's only a handful of people have ever managed two shows. Although, we've only been going 8 months, and we've had over 10,000 downloads. So,
okay, yeah.
This is a good time to be on the podcast because it's still going for one thing, which is amazing.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, and I'm hoping to go. Me and Dan had this conversation a while ago that we want to go till we're 70 at least.
You're 70. Until you are 70.
Oh, yeah. When we've talked to everyone in the world, then we're just going to go round again and do it all.
do it again and see if they've been telling lies. Ask the same questions.
That's a great idea. Try and recreate their first interview. Script it and reenact it. Could do that. So when you left Middlesex, what were some of the let me ask a better question. Other than your year at the London Music School, is there any particular times in your life that feel really formative with your bass playing?
After studying, you mean, yeah?
Yeah, or while studying, if there was, that can be a thing.
I think just a period after actually was... I mean, obviously studying is one thing, but then just playing with lots of people, and I just was really lucky and met some amazing people straight away. And, at that time I met Seb Rochford, who he was amazing. He just asked me to play loads, and Johnny Phillips. And so I just was playing with all these people straight after uni, and I just learned loads just from doing that, it was great.
How much practice do you reckon, compared to how much playing you've done, what's the ratio?
Oh gosh, I don't know. I've got no idea, because it really depends, I think my practice, I'm not very very vigilant, I don't know the word now. Anyway, I'm not very regular with practice. So I might have a month where I don't practice, and then I have a month where I practice loads, or it really depends, or a week, or, it's really, so I don't really know. No idea, because I suppose I spend a lot of time learning other people's music as well. I'm not sure if that is part. That's probably not really practice, is it? But at home, that's what I do loads. If there's a gig that's coming up, I have to just look at some stuff before.
Oh yeah, that's how I learned the clarinet. 100% by by just learning, by getting music that was way too hard for me and being like, oh crap, I said I could play this, and then learning it and just repeating that process over and over again of constantly sticking my neck out a bit too far until eventually it kind of started to like work out a little bit.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you do learn doing that. You don't just learn that music, but you know, just like reading stuff, or
yeah,
you all that stuff gets a lot better.
I have a theory that a lot of jazz musicians have become jazz musicians because of a reluctance to want to do any practice on their own. Because that's definitely why I became one.
Jazz musicians don't practice on their own?
No, I think they do. I just don't think they like it very much. And that they don't do enough to become like full-on classical musicians. When I was at college, you know, people on the classical course... doing like 4 hours a day, at least every day. And there's no way I could cope with that. So you kind of make it up with having plays and rehearsing and writing music and doing things that anything but practice on. But then that, yeah.
But loads of people practice loads as well, like jazz musicians.
I realize now in my later years that whilst I was pissing around, everyone else was practicing a lot. Nick Smart said to me once, I'm sure he won't mind me sharing this, and if he does mind, it's too late. I went into a lesson with him once, and he was like, he went, Rob, I want to talk to you. And I was like, yeah, go on. And then he opened his fingers apart, like, no, he said, you've done all right while you've been here. You've improved this much. And he showed his hands like the length of an arm apart. You know, and then he went, now, if you'd have done some practice, you could have improved this much. And he widened his arms as wide as he possibly could. So now there's like a meter in between. And then he goes, but you've only improved this much. And he basically brought his hands back together again. And then, oh my God, Ruth, we just sat in silence for a minute. And I was like,
oh no.
Oh yeah. I was like, oh no, don't do this to me, Nick. Oh, it was brutal.
And have you practiced from then on? Have you practiced more? Did it work?
A bit like what you say, I go in these phases of extraordinary, like I go from being obsessed to kind of relaxing back to got very addictive personality.
Really?
Yeah. So, but that's a good thing, I think, when you're trying to learn something.
Oh.
Sorry. It's my cat again. He's
what's his name?
George Cope. He is a rag doll. He's got blue eyes and he's very, really? Very, very fluffy.
Oh,
yeah.
Amazing.
But he's like a dog. He plays fetch, but he only plays with hair bobbles.
With?
With like hair bobbles, you know, like hair ties that you do.
Oh, okay. Like,
yeah. It's great when I'm teaching, like quite often these like little, like think, you know, these hair bubbles will fall out of my pockets. Yeah, it's a good look for me. I like it. So, sorry, this interview is about you, Ruth. And so I'm going to ask you some questions.
Well, as long as we're talking about cats. We're talking about something.
How many cats have you owned?
In my life?
Yeah, including any family.
That's a good question. So first... there was Felix, who was my first cat when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
He was a ginger tom. He was lovely. I think he died when he was about 16 or something.
Oh.
Then me and Kit, the first cat we adopted was Buster, who was a huge, big, fat black cat.
Yeah.
He was 10 and had everything wrong with him that you could possibly imagine. He had like diarrhea like 5 times a day.
Oh, poor guy.
But he was happy, you know. He had like a good retirement home. So
that's
we had
great.
Him for, yeah. Unfortunately, he only lasted like a couple of years because he had heart failure.
Oh.
But he was happy, you know.
Yeah.
Then we adopted Roger and Kylie. Roger is still around.
Yeah, I think I met Roger.
Yeah, met Roger. That's right. Roger's still here. Kylie, unfortunately, not anymore.
Oh.
She had cancer. We had to put her down in April.
Oh, that's so sad.
And now we've adopted this other senior cat called Lacey.
Yeah.
We thought, are we going to get Roger a really old, you know, partner? Yeah. Turns out she's just a complete monster. She's just like all over the shop and just wants to attack him. And we thought, oh, she'd just be sleeping somewhere all day. It'd be great. You know, Roger's going to love that.
Yeah.
She's just like jumping about and just, yeah, full of beans. But she's doing really well. She's happy, you know.
Yeah, hopefully we can, there's a way to smooth over the tension.
Yeah. I'm open for any kind of suggestions. Yeah. I've tried literally everything and I'm still doing it. But if there are any secrets out there.
Oh, wow. Right. Well, that, then the listeners, we need you people. Yeah. To see what we can do about this. I love a weekly campaign. And this week it's all about your cats.
Yeah. Introducing two cats. I mean, everything you can find on the internet, I've read it, so not like, you know, not things that everyone knows.
Yeah.
I mean, like real sort of gems that people have discovered themselves and that no one knows about. Those are the things that I need to know.
That's the stuff, yeah. Only, please, like, tweet only if you're a cat expert or a vet, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the deal. Don't clog up the communications with... you know, top 10 YouTube videos of kittens falling into bowls.
Yeah. Just watched all of that.
Been all over that. Know all about that. What are some of that of your like absolute favorite projects? That, because you are doing a lot of things. There is a very long list, easily Googled, of what you do, Ruth, and who you play with. Okay. So I won't read it all out. But is there anything that like when they call you for a gig, you're like, yes, I love these guys. This is going to be incredible.
Yeah, well, I think actually most of the stuff that I do at the moment is I kind of do it because I really want to do it.
Yeah.
So, Melt Yourself Down is always amazing. Love playing with that band.
What is that?
It's Pete Wareham's band.
Right.
And yeah, it's like, it's drums, percussion, bass, two saxes and the singer as well. So I've been playing for a few years. It's really, really good. Really good fun.
Two saxophones is always a good thing.
Well, it depends who is playing. Could be an awful thing.
Yeah, okay. I can see that perspective.
If I was playing the saxophone, it'd be terrible.
Have you tried?
I tried and I fainted literally after trying to blow one note. So, yeah, no.
Not for you.
Not for me.
Oh, well, no. Good work giving it a go.
So, yeah, that's always great fun. Then another thing is Boulaville. I've been doing lots of stuff with you know, Bex Birch. She plays Jill, so
big right.
marimba-type instrument.
Oh, cool.
From Ghana. Yeah, been doing lots with her band recently.
Oh, that sounds cool. Is that's like a African-tuned percussion?
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of, well, it's like a balafon, but it's huge.
Right.
You know, sort of, well, it's mainly pentatonic, but she also has a non-pentatonic one, but that's something she built. So I think normally they are pentatonic. But it's the whole, it's a very specific, she really got into a Ghanaian funeral music, which is a very specific thing. So
yeah,
it's been great learning a lot about that. You know, it's also incredibly hard.
Yeah.
So it's super challenging just learning, trying to learn that music and trying to get my head around it. And but also making it our own a little bit, you know, obviously.
Yeah.
So, we've just recorded a new record. Just been listening to it yesterday.
Oh, wow.
For the first time. So it's really, really exciting.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
What drew you to want to play the bass in the first place?
I don't know. I wonder whether Maybe at the beginning it was coincidence. I know that doesn't sound very romantic, but I was playing guitar and singing in a punk band, and then we just wanted to try some stuff with two basses, and I sort of was like, okay, yeah, I'll do it. But as soon as I played, I did really enjoy it. So it wasn't like, you know, well, I'm just going to do that. It was like, yeah, I loved it. I loved the sound of that. And I think my brain sort of works more linear. You know, I find like piano playing or guitar playing for me, it's really, I almost can't understand how you can think of so many things at the same time.
Yeah.
So I'm much more linear in that way, so that worked for me. But also I just love the sound of it, you know. I think I love low frequencies a lot, yeah, more than high frequency instruments. So yeah, that was it really.
That's cool. That's a great way to get involved.
Yeah, a
bit like Sting, like singing and playing bass. That sounds like a good way to start.
Yeah, I think, well, when I was playing bass at first, I didn't really sing anymore. There was someone else was singing then at that time.
Okay, but, okay, yeah. Not like Sting. Forget all about that.
I still sing a little bit now, but more like backing vocals and stuff like that, rather than not really a singer, like singer. Cool.
Everyone loves someone that can do backing vocals.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. Actually, yeah. It's great.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's good fun.
Do you ever play double bass?
Yeah, I play double bass as well. Yeah. So, yeah.
Is that like because you want to, or just because you're supposed to, or I don't know? Are people fussy about that, or do you just take whatever bass you want?
Yeah, no, people usually know what they want, kind of sound they want in their band, but
yeah.
Often if I say, look, I think this sounds rubbish, let's try that. And, you know, obviously most people would listen to that. But
yeah,
I think it's most of the time it's quite clear what it needs, you know, whether it's sort of electric bass, kind of full on different pedals and stuff, or more like a softer sound, or more like jazz kind of stuff.
Do you have a preference?
I think I play more electric bass, so I'm definitely first an electric bass player,
right,
and then a double bass player. But I really love playing double bass as well.
Yeah,
for certain things, if I do a jazz gig, then definitely prefer playing double bass.
Yeah,
just because it sounds better, or you know, or just playing with acoustic instruments, I suppose. It sounds better.
Do you have any favourite bass players?
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely like a few that I really like. Like, I love Tim Lefebvre.
I'm going quiet because I'm scared of saying something stupid. don't really know who that is, Ruth.
You
have to tell me about him.
Well, hold on. Let me just get Lacey off my lap. She's protesting.
It's 36 minutes you've not fussed her for, and that's the limit.
Well, he recorded the last, you know, the Black Star by David Bowie. He did that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. But hold on, let me just see. Well, he plays in Wayne Krantz's band, which you probably know.
He's a guitarist.
Yeah.
Better be. Yeah, for you.
Yeah. Or he plays with the Tedeschi and Trucks band, which is absolutely incredible. Cool. I love that band. Yeah. But yeah, he plays with loads of people.
Yeah.
Really, really great musician.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Some more research for my very long list of things that I have no idea about. Is there anyone else you'd care to add to that list while we're talking about it?
Who else do I like? I like Mike Watts. He's a... Do you know him?
No.
He's like... he's an American bass player. He's sort of quite... Yeah, I think he sort of played with lots of punk bands and... yeah, sort of not really jazz. He doesn't, yeah. He's not really a jazz player, but electric bass player as well.
Yeah.
So he's brilliant. Double bass. I love. I think Charlie Hayden is my total hero.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a really nice. There's. I think it's on. I know what it is. The Matheny album, 80-81. There's like 10 minutes in, Charlie Hayden plays a lovely, it's a folk song. Can't remember if it's just with drums, maybe just a duo for like 8 minutes of bass, and it's so lovely.
Really? I don't even know it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's a very, it's a really nice album with Pat Metheny with, it's like Pat's, it sounds really open, like he's allowing people to improvise, which isn't always the vibe with, with like Mike Brecker and Dewey Redman and Jack DeJohnette, Charlie Hayden. I think that's it, just the five of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, there's some great, there's some cool stuff. He died a few years ago, didn't he, Charlie Hayden?
Yeah, maybe 3 years ago, something like that. Quite recently.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. If you Google 8081, then the first thing that comes up is a mathematical equation. Then the second thing that comes up is the Metheny album.
Oh, right. Well, maybe it comes from that. Maybe there's a concept behind that.
That would be very interesting if there is. I'd like to know about it. Someone far more intelligent than I am is going to have to deal with that problem. So, Ruth, tell us about the article you write. You write a monthly column for Bass Guitar Magazine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I've been doing that for years.
That's awesome. How did you get to do that?
Well, I know I play a band that I play with called Let's Spin. There is a guitarist, he's called Moss Freed. Amazing. Yeah,
I was in Manchester with him.
Yeah, right, yeah. And his brother is the chief editor of that of that magazine.
Cool.
So I met him, he always comes when we play, and he's a really, really great guy. So he just asked me one day if I wanted to do that, and I've just done it.
That's
since
awesome.
Then. It's been like 5 years. It's been like a ridiculous amount
That's
of time.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
How easy did you find it to think of things to write about?
Incredibly difficult. Just because it's been such a long time, you know.
Yeah.
That I've been doing it every month to think of a different thing that you haven't. And sometimes the articles are not as interesting.
Yeah.
But, you know, you sort of want it to be the best.
Yeah.
The most interesting possible, but it's just after a while, it's just difficult to think of something. So I mean, it's got to be kind of bass related, obviously. Yeah. You know, you can't just sort of, yeah, it can be music related, no, but it's really got to have, you know, it's really a bass magazine. So
yeah.
I've literally written about everything I could think of.
Wow.
Like posture,
awesome.
Sound, bowing, picking, pedals, composition, improv, anything, name it, I've written about it.
Brilliant. Have you talked about different strings?
Yes, different strings.
Great.
This can be another moment for people to tell me what what they want. Some suggestions for my future columns.
Oh,
that'd
that's
be great.
That's a fantastic idea.
Because often me and Kit, the day before, I have to send it to them. Often I'm just like, oh, I need a subject. Please just tell me something.
Wow.
But yeah.
That is cool. That's such
a cool
thing.
I've always managed so far.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That is a cool thing to get to do.
Yeah, it's good. It's been great.
Is there any Charlie Hayden that you're particularly fond of that you remember listening to?
Yeah, I love that album with him and what's it called now? The piano player, Hank Jones. That's it. Charlie Hayden and Hank Jones.
Oh, cool.
It's called "Steal Away." The album is. I love that album. It's beautiful. They play like gospel tunes.
Yeah, I'm going to write that down right now.
It's an amazing, amazing album.
Yeah.
Oh, hold on, I've got a cat moment here. Lacey needs to go out, and Roger needs to come in.
Oh wow! It's like a. I don't know what's the word I'm looking for here. Feels like an airport, you know, when you have to have a glass screen between the like departing and arriving passengers.
Basically, that's how it's. And they both want to go out, but they can only go out one when the other one's out. The other one's got to be in, and then vice versa. So it's always
a tough one.
Oh well.
What's the name of that album?
It's called "Steal Away."
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Hank Jones and Charlie Hayden.
All right, I have one more question for you, Ruth.
Yes.
Tell us about your hobbies that are not related to playing the bass. Chocolate making, of course.
Yeah, I do a bit of cooking, but I don't really like it. It's more like a necessity, so that's not really a hobby.
Okay.
My hobby is walking.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Anywhere in particular or just everything?
Well, generally, like where we live here in Chesham, there's some great walks. So you've seen where we live, right? Just next door to us is like big fields and forests and stuff. So we go walking there a lot, but also in the Alps. I mean, it's always kind of been something, you know, going in the mountains and and Kit loves it as well. So sometimes we go out there like for 2 weeks and we just do lots and lots of walking and it's amazing.
That sounds really incredibly relaxing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's lovely. I love it.
Well, Ruth, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
On the Jazz Podcast.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks a
lot. Cheers. Thank you.
Well, I enjoyed that.
Hmm. Yeah.
Sorry about all the meows, listeners. It really, George has never been quite so angry during a show before.
Yeah?
I think he was...
What was going on?
Well, we've been away for a week. So we got back and we've been back about an hour when I thought it would be a great idea to do an interview. And he's sitting here now, but like normal midday cat vibes, you know, in silence.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a bit of a disaster. It doesn't come across as a particularly professional vibe when you can't create a podcast without a cat screaming into the microphone.
Yeah.
But again, we have no money. So if you'd like a podcast where there aren't cat meows, feel free to support us on Patreon and then we can
rid of George.
I can pay. I can send him to a cattery or get a cat sitter to mute him for an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How much do you think we'd have to raise to get that to happen?
Well, the cat sitter's like £10 a day.
Yeah.
So if I paid her to come over, Vida, she's called. She's unbelievable, this woman. She walks wolves in her spare time.
She walks wolves?
Yeah, she's like inducted into the wolf pack and they don't kill her. It's like a wolf sanctuary in Reading.
Right.
Yeah, and she walks wolves, and then she comes and fusses George.
Right, cool.
Yeah, it's really something.
Nice.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, so if you want Vida to come over and make the podcast quieter, support us on Patreon.
Do it.
Patreon.com, search for the Jazz Podcast, and then you can help us to ensure this show runs until Dan and I are 70, as we've always planned.
Yeah. I look forward to that.
Yeah, me too. In the meantime, I don't know who's next, so that can be a delightful surprise.
Great.
But whoever it is, we'll see you in two weeks on Friday.
Ciao.